Hi everyone. Before we get started today, I want to talk to you about our newest partner, BetterHelp. Throughout my own grieving process, I have found therapy to be critical in getting me to the point where I am today, and I truly cannot imagine getting through this past year without it. A lot of the world is still in some sort of quarantine or phased opening, and BetterHelp is a perfect platform for accessing therapy during this time because you can do it from wherever you are. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist, and you can have your first session scheduled in as little as 24 hours, which is huge. I know for a lot of people, you hit a roadblock in starting therapy because there's a pressure to really find the right fit. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. It's really easy to change a counselor if you feel like you want a better fit. The therapist you're matched with is available weekly, but you can send messages anytime through the app and get responses between sessions, which makes such a big difference, especially when you are processing a loss. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and they also have financial aid available, which I love and is one of the reasons that I decided to partner with them. We have a special offer for the Grief Coach listeners where you'll get 10% off your first month at trybetterhelp.com/thegriefcoach. That's trybetterhelp.com/thegriefcoach. You can join over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. Investing in yourself is so important. If you've listened to any of the previous episodes, you know how much I prioritize doing the work to get through the grief process, and BetterHelp is a wonderful platform to leverage to do so. Go to trybetterhelp.com/thegriefcoach to get started. Hi everyone, welcome to the Grief Coach. This is Brooke James. If you've listened before, welcome back. And if it's your first time listening, I'm so glad you're here. Today we have with us comedian, producer, and host of Stage Four Clingers, Kate Nichols. Kate, thanks so much for being here today.
I'm so excited to talk to you, Brooke. I'm glad we finally got to do this.
Me too. So just for background for the audience, Kate and I started talking right in the beginning of the pandemic. So this is a long time coming and we're really excited to
Yes.
both be here today. So Kate, if you want to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about who you are, what you do, and then we can get into your grief experience and go from there.
I mean, I'm my own favorite topic, so I can go on for days, so just stop me
Amazing.
whenever. My background is in comedy, stand-up, and sketch writing. I've worked mostly in television, some film, in writing and producing, and I started a podcast, a comedy podcast about breast cancer with my mom, who has stage four breast cancer, called Stage Four Clinger. So just using that comedy background to make fun of her lack of nipples, really.
I don't think I knew that was a thing that happened when you had breast cancer. So this is already educational. So why don't we start with how you decided to start the podcast? And it sounds like, partly because of your background in comedy, but why is it so important for you to approach this content or a subject with a sense of humor?
So when my mom was first diagnosed, she felt like she had to kind of whisper about having cancer or talk about it behind closed doors or lower her voice when she's talking about it. And then we were just kind of like, screw that. She's like, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything that I need to be embarrassed about. I just have breast cancer. And I think a lot of people feel that way where they feel like it's a with grief, with illness, people kind of shy away from talking about it or from
Totally.
taking its power away by making fun of it. So that was my mom's whole desire. And so she told me that she wanted to do a podcast, but she's so such a Luddite. She said, let's do one of those blogs. And I was like, what kind of blog? She's like, you know, where you talk. And I was like, you mean a podcast? So that we just kind of talked about it for like a year and a half. I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I was home for Christmas, and just kind of clicked. The name Stage 4 Clinger came into my head and we just started recording. And then we planned to just record 10 episodes and then I was going to be moving back to Los Angeles, but the pandemic mm-hmm. hit. So now we're on episode 26 now. And I've just been living with my mom as a 29-year-old, killing it.
Amazing. Well, it must be like fun to get to spend time together, or like
it really is.
There's like pros and cons to all yeah. the pandemic living situations. But
it's really it's really given us time to become friends as adults. You know, I feel like yeah. a lot of people don't live with their parents as adults, and it's just a time that I'll always look back fondly on, even yeah. though it's been a real damper on my dating life.
Well, the pandemic unfortunately is putting a damper on yeah. most people's dating lives.
Yeah, true.
mine included. I don't know where she is in her disease, but do you feel like you're acting as a caretaker for her, or how is that working?
For sure. Yeah, so she had her double mastectomy about 2.5 years ago. So that was very much like the hands-on caretaking. There's a lot of post-op care that I had no idea about, and you just kind of get thrown into it. And so we went through that together, and now I feel like the caretaking is more, like I noticed when I came home, because I moved back to California after she was stable, and anytime I would come home, she would kind of stop feeding herself well. She would stop doing things that she enjoyed. She kind of just mm-hmm. Let the scariness of depression, depression crept in through the cancer. And so I realized that especially with the pandemic, she would need me. She doesn't cook. She hates grocery shopping. She just needs a buddy right now, especially yeah. since my dad passed. So my caretaking is a lot more emotional, and I'd say maybe nutritional, making sure that she's not eating canned spaghetti.
Very important though.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So when my dad was sick, a lot of it was going to doctor's appointments, and then he got so bad so quickly that I wanted to make a spreadsheet of who was coming and were people bringing dinner, and he was like, this is really an invasion of my privacy. And I was like, no, mm-hmm. it's just making sure that you're eating. If people are with you. And then I ended up stopping working and moving in with him. And so did mm-hmm. my brother. My sister was going back and forth, and his brother mm-hmm. came from Chicago, and it was a whole care crew. But the emotional part of it, it sounds like, and from I've listened to you on other podcasts and I've listened to your mm-hmm. podcast, that it's like a companionship and hanging out together, which is yeah. so important and so nice, because I think to kind of your Freudian slip of the depression creeping in yeah. earlier, but that's a real thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's emotional. Was there something before the pandemic that solidified your decision to come back? And what was it like to be going back and forth and be watching this from afar when it first started happening?
Well, this might sound kind of creepy. I don't think that I have any supernatural powers. Maybe I shouldn't say that because I might. I had this feeling when I was home for Christmas. I drove home. I just had this feeling I need to stick around for at least a year. And mm-hmm. I thought that it was going to be because something was happening with her health. I don't know. Before my dad passed away, I had a dream about it the night before. I just kind of creepy.
But so you do have superpowers.
So I'm really impressive and magical.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, this is why all my exes are balding. the hex I put on them. But I had this feeling that just kept rattling around in my head that you need to be home this year. You need to be mm-hmm. home this year. And so I was I was going back and forth, and then the pandemic definitely solidified it. I forget what the second part of your question was.
I think what was it like to when this first started happening?
And going back and forth. Yeah. It was very difficult to be far away on both of us. Mm-hmm. It's especially, I work as, you know, a writer and comedian. A lot of times I work from home already. So I'm living out in California while my mom is on the East Coast in Maryland. And I'm driving back and forth whenever I can, which is crazy. Anytime that she wasn't feeling well, mentally or physically, it would be really hard on me to be far away and not feel mm-hmm. like there's much I could do about it. So I do feel like my stress and anxiety levels have gone down since I decided to come back here for as long as she's around is really yeah. what I'm planning on, is to be primarily based in Maryland as long as possible. And it's really kind of selfishly made me feel much more at ease. So
yeah, no, I totally get that. And because my dad was older, so he was 75 when he died, but in like 2014, I was living in DC. I went to school there. I was working down there after college. Mm-hmm. And I think he fell or like something happened. And I was like, I wanted to live in New York anyway, and I knew that was like end goal. And yeah. I grew up in Connecticut, so like an hour outside the city. And I was just like, I need to be up there because if something happens, I don't want to be far away.
Mm-hmm. Oh like, yeah.
And so I think
that's the nightmare.
Yeah. So if we can switch into something that we had talked about before we started recording, and I know mm-hmm. you've talked about before, but how has your dad passing, in whatever context and backstory you want to give there, about your dad passing away, and how has that changed your relationship with your mom? Was it easier to talk about end of life stuff? Like, just, I think I've noticed totally. For me that there's been a change. And so it's mm-hmm. something I'm interested to talk with other people about.
Yeah, it definitely made us talk very practically about end of life stuff, because with stage mm-hmm. 4 cancer, my mom is going to have cancer for the rest of her life. So there's no delusion unless, I mean, we have no idea what the future holds, but it's after my dad passing and us having to go through all of this sort of planning and really, yeah, just doing the funeral, doing all the paperwork, all this stuff like that. It's made my mom and I talk very matter-of-factly about mm-hmm. future plans, what she'd like and what she wouldn't like. She likes to joke, like, if I suggest something for a funeral, she's like, when your next mom dies, you can have a cake with titties on it. But for now, I want a, like, a tasteful ceremony. It's very different because my dad and I were estranged when he passed. He struggled for most of his adult life with addiction, between alcoholism and then after a fall when I was a kid, he shattered his knee and became addicted to OxyContin pretty quickly through prescriptions. And that really just mm-hmm. negatively impacted our entire family. And so his addiction issues partnered with, I would say, mental health issues and just all around stubbornness made it so that I couldn't have this close relationship with him. And mm-hmm. as sort of self-preservation towards the last year of his life, we didn't have any contact. I had him blocked on my phone. And it was difficult going through, like, after passing and seeing, like, the blocked voicemails that he left. And some are nonsensical and some are sweet and comforting. And some, you know, it's just a mixed bag because you never know what you'd get with him. But it's, I talked about this on one of our mutual favorite podcasts, Girls Gotta Eat, but
yeah,
I had a sense of relief after my dad passed away, mm-hmm. and that was very confusing. And mm-hmm. While I was still grieving, it was a lot to unpack and a lot of guilt to deal with and acknowledge that just because I know that my dad's quality of life was never going to improve on this planet, he was never going to get sober. He was never going to get his shit together. He was never going to take the accountability that would have allowed myself and my brother, my mom, to come back into his life in a big way. So it was sort of like, oh, he's finally at peace now.
And that's something people don't talk about, mm-hmm. that like relief.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, I think more people should talk about it because I think, especially in our American culture, we're so afraid of talking frankly about death and illness. Like, that's sort of what started my podcast and your podcast, is just like, let's talk 100%. About it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it takes like the like the boogeyman out of it. Like, it's just like, yeah, it's a part of life. And I feel like since embracing that death is such a part of life, I've been able to enjoy life so much more fully and really feed less into my anxieties and more into like my hopes.
That's so poetic. Yeah. I love that.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
But I think it's true. And like, I started a business, I started a podcast, and I was just, well, if not now, when? And mm-hmm. like, what is the worst thing that could happen? Like,
exactly.
I have to go back and get a job in finance. That's the worst thing that could happen. And so,
and that's not so bad.
And like, I would be fine. And yeah. So it's just, it's like, I think that going through something like a big loss or watching someone you love get sick, it really puts things into this perspective that mm-hmm. is so, so important. But going back to the conflicted grief and the not talking about it, do you find, and I'd be interested, since you started your podcast and you're talking about this like boogeyman subject publicly, I don't ever talk about the weather with people anymore. Like when I meet yeah. people, like pre-corona, I guess, but people would be like, what do you do? And I'd be like, I have a business, I have a podcast. And they're like, what's your podcast? I'm like, grief. And they're like, oh. And then we end up having like, I have like deep conversations with like strangers, and it kind of like mm-hmm. cuts out nonsense, which I think is really cool. But is that something that you find as well?
I've found that I'm really bad at small talk now, just as you were saying. Like, I'll just like dive straight into like, hi, what are your past traumas? Like,
yeah.
It's probably yeah. why I'm probably a contributing factor to why I don't date much. Besides the pandemic, is that usually my opening lines on Bumble are like, so what mommy issues brought you to this app today? I got a warning from Bumble not to ask people that anymore. So I got put on a little timeout. I got reported because men are so sensitive, wow. Which men be more sensitive, embrace it, but don't report me.
Oh my God.
But I definitely like, yeah, I can't really talk about I like to dive deep in with people now. I'm not, I think you really are no longer afraid of the depths. Like once you go through some of the more painful things in life. So you're just like, I think you can really see people, and you can kind of see if they're hurting, the things that they're putting on as like a mask to cover it. And you're just like, hey, let's talk about that. Let's talk about what this whole thing you got going on here is.
And I also feel like if you give people an opening, which like, hi, I have a podcast about like my mm-hmm. dead dad and grief, or like my mom having cancer, like people mm-hmm. like who may not give themselves space to talk about anything in relation in that sphere. Like, mm-hmm. are like, oh, I can talk about it with this person. And yeah. I think that's like one of my favorite parts about
I love
what
it.
The podcast has done.
Yeah, exactly. I love that, like, the people who are sliding in my DMs now are there to talk about, like, their deep traumas and, like, not, like, dick pics anymore, which I kind of do miss, the unsolicited dick pics. But I really love that people feel comfortable enough to talk to me about, like, a parent that's mentally ill, a parent that struggles with addiction, a parent that's struggling with a life-threatening disease, a parent they're close to, a parent they're struggling with. And I love that I can be an asset to these people, because if you and I aren't using the stuff that we've gone through to try to help others, then like, then what's the point? Was it just worth, like, did it just happen for nothing?
Well, it's like a missed opportunity almost. Like yeah. you could very mm-hmm. easily work a corporate job and take like 5 days of bereavement and then like go back to work. And then never talk about it again. But then, I don't know, it's like, I feel like it's really a missed opportunity because it provides a road for such a deeper connection.
Yeah, and that's just so American, what you just described, is that what you're going to do is you're going to take 5 days off from work, and then you're not going to talk to me about it again.
Right, totally. And I remember, like, when, you know, my dad was sick, and people at work would be like, how you doing? And I would be like sneaking into a phone booth to talk to him about like how his doctor's appointment went. Be like, well, mm-hmm. we found out that like this test result or this, and it would just be like having to hide that portion of yourself. Like I'm mm-hmm. not like that. I'm very much an open book, and like you are too. Mm-hmm. But, and so I would share what people probably thought was too much information. Having to hide that felt mm-hmm. very unnatural to me.
It feels disingenuous and unauthentic, and those are two things that make me feel personally very uncomfortable in my own skin yeah. when I'm displaying those
yeah.
attributes. And then it's like, even if that person is uncomfortable in that moment, especially a person who asks, hey, how are you? They aren't really asking how you are, so a lot of times I'll let them off the hook. But like, if someone does ask me how my mom's doing, I will tell them honestly. And sometimes I can tell like, ooh, that was more than I was bargaining for. But then usually they'll eventually come back to me with like a lot of times they'll be like, hey, I have an uncle that's going through this. Do you mind if I like talk to you about it? And it's like, see, mm-hmm. I made you uncomfortable for a reason. Now, you know, you can come yeah. to me.
Yeah. I would even joke like, oh, that's probably like more than you thought you were going to get when you asked that question.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So, totally.
But I think, yeah, but then like people do feel like, oh, I know I can go to them because probably other people in their life are being closed off about those big things mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. don't feel like it's okay to talk about. Do you think that having that space with people, that's the biggest lesson that you've learned from your podcast? It sounds like it's like the biggest, one of the things that
it's
you've like
the biggest reward.
Yeah. But what have you learned anything or figured out anything like cool, or how has it, I'm sure it's like made you and your mom closer, but like from starting mm-hmm. your podcast with your mom, like what, how has that been? And like, what's that like?
It's been the coolest thing. She's constantly been impressing me. She's an insurance agent in our small town in Maryland. And I've been out performing like between New York and Los Angeles since I was 17. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, we've never had that much like in common besides how much we love each other. I did not know how she was going to do like our first day of recording because she hates public speaking. She gets tongue-tied easily and flustered easily, and she has continually impressed me. So I'm just in awe of what a natural entertainer she is. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's taught us both to really trust each other because we will never let each other. She knows that. She said that she feels so comfortable on the podcast because I'll always be like her safety net. If she says something weird, I'll turn it into something good. So, and vice versa. I love our relationship, and I love that we have this time capsule that we're creating, that when she eventually does pass, I will have this record of our very unique relationship and these cool interviews that we get to do with celebrities that we love, and that I'll get to show, even if, you know, she isn't around by the time that I eventually adopt kids or whatever I want to do, they will be able to get to know their grandparent through this podcast. And I think the most fun is that, like, so it's all just supposed to be fun. And so these, mm-hmm. we interview bucket list worthy people. And so we do research together. So each day at the end of our prospective work from home days, we'll go meet downstairs and I make dinner and we'll start binge watching whatever our next guest is on. And it's just like so much fun and such a fun activity for us to do, and gives us something to look forward to, especially in quarantine.
That's awesome. No, and you guys have such a great dynamic too. I think
you're
welcome. One of the things that like I noticed is after my dad died, I was like, oh my God, like I don't have his voice mm-hmm. anywhere. And so I love the way that you call it a time capsule, because by the time I realized that I needed to get these family stories of mm-hmm. his, he was on too many painkillers that he couldn't tell them. My grandpa was a producer on Broadway, and my dad worked on the show. I was asking him questions about it, and he was like getting confused. I had this like sinking feeling of like, fuck, all of these great stories are gone and they're gonna die with him. What I would encourage people, and it sounds like you would too, I don't wanna put words in your mouth though, but of like wherever you can, either just record yourself talking to someone, record videos, which so many of us do anyway. But I realized I had a lot of pictures of my dad and I, but I didn't have a lot of like videos of him mm-hmm. talking. Like that's a great quarantine project. Interview your parents and like get the like fun family stories or like whatever it is.
Totally.
Because I have a couple of really close friends who've lost parents, and everyone is like, I wish I had more recordings of their voice.
Yeah, so. even if it's like they have these things now where your parent or grandparent or whoever can write, like they have like writing prompt books to help them get down their story, because I think I'm not like loving this trend where people aren't spending as much time with like their parents and grandparents, because I know that there's so many things that separate us from our different mm-hmm. views and experiences from the boomers and you know, but there is such a wealth of knowledge there, and especially about like, God, every single thing that I do is based on, I learned so much about myself by learning about the people who came before me, and it's like, why do I feel this way about that? And it's like, oh, well, your great grandmother went through this. It's like, oh, okay. But it's I just feel like my life is so much richer for having those conversations with my mom and my relatives, and actually taking that time just to hear those stories. And then I can pass those on to whomever comes next. but I do really recommend talking to people. Like, my grandparents passed away before I could really get to know them, and I just mm-hmm. wish that there had been a clearer record.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. One of my cousins, I'm so grateful, took my grandma, who I think she was born in 1914. But mm-hmm. when in Grand Central, they did this big audio recording, like, history project, and you could take in your grandparents or whoever to, like, record stories.
Oh,
and
cool.
So we have those, and we have, my dad had sat down and interviewed her and videotaped it. So have some of those. But I think the more we can, like, normalize that, like, mm-hmm. just videotape people, and it doesn't need to be like, okay, we're going to sit down and, like, talk about the family history. Like, it yeah. can be, it can be casual. And, like,
absolutely.
You don't have to start a podcast, but you can start a podcast. Like, mm-hmm. yeah. that you, I just love the way that you put that, that you're building a time capsule. And so I wanted to share what I had experienced when he was, like, in hospice and afterwards, that that's advice that I would give people 100%.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have any other advice for people who are dealing with a sick parent?
I guess my advice would be to find ways to enjoy each other's company. Like, it doesn't all have to be so serious. You don't need to be like, tell me everything about your life and let me catalog it. My mom and I, when she gets to, like, if she gets depressed or isn't feeling well, I'm actually kind of, like, tough on her. I'm like, we don't have any sick people in this house. Like, get your ass up. We're going for a walk. Like, let's go. You don't have to treat them with, like, kid gloves. Like, I tease her nonstop, and I call her old lady as her, like, affectionate nickname. don't take it that seriously, because if this is you finding out that you don't have as much time with your parent as you thought, then make it a good time.
Let
your fear of, like, sadness, I don't know. Like, I think it's, I think, I don't know. There's a feeling of, like, of fear, because you know that, okay, I'm going to lose this person. So kind of a self-preservation, I think, instinctually, like, I don't want to speak for my brother, but I felt like at first he started to pull away because mm-hmm. he was just so freaked out and so sad and didn't want to deal with it. So he's like, I'm going to avoid, and I'm just not going to deal with it. And then it took my mom and I having a conversation with him about, you're going to regret pulling away from us in this time. And now it's 100% better. If your first response is fear, and then that fear makes you go into fight or flight mode, try to get to a different response. Try to work mm-hmm. through that. And I am a huge, huge advocate of therapy, of support groups, of self-help books, meditation, all of those things, and physical exercise, just movement that makes your body feel good. As a caretaker, that stuff has been invaluable to me.
100%. I would take, when he was in hospice, we had, like, our care team, and my uncle and I'd be like, okay, I'm going to do the early gym shift, and you're going to mm-hmm. do the late one, because just, you need to, like, get out of your head, I feel
yes.
like.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, and I love therapy, but one thing you said about calling your mom, like, old lady. And so my dad was in denial when he first got diagnosed, and he didn't tell anyone. I mean, I've talked about this on previous episodes, but he didn't want to tell people what kind of cancer he had, because if you Google it, you see most people don't survive, and he didn't want people to worry. So even in our family, like, my cousins and I think his siblings didn't find out what kind of cancer he had until he was already in hospice. But, like, I knew, and my siblings knew. But what I took from that was that he, like, didn't want to be a sick person. He was in the toy business. He went to the last toy fair, and toy fair every year is in February in New York at the Javits, and he died in April. So it was, like, very close to the end. And he had, like, in February, like, lost a bunch of weight. He needed a cane. His hair had fallen out a little bit. And I was like, people are going to know. And I was like, they're going to know you're sick. And he was like, no, they're not. And he was like, I'll tell people that I have been trying for a really long time to lose weight, and I finally did it. And I got a haircut, and that's why my hair is so short. And I'm using a cane because of my knee. And I was like, okay. But he wanted this, like, last hurrah, I think. And he didn't want to be the sick person. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So I thought that was really, I don't know. I don't know if I would have done it that way, but he did. Mm-hmm. And it worked for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think realizing that there's no, whatever works for you, people can listen to you and I talk about our own personal experiences, but like you get to make the rule book.
Yeah.
When my grandmother was passing away, she was dealing with dementia and she was living in the house with us. And at first it was so frustrating and scary when she didn't know what was going on. Like she'd wake up and say things like, do the people who live here know that we're here? Or why doesn't anybody have a helmet on? When we're like, we're just walking around, grandma. So instead of trying to like correct her, we decided to all like improv rules, always say yes and. And so she'd be like, it's Christmas morning. We'd be like, yeah, it is. And I got a pony. It's out back. And like, just having fun with it. Because why not? There's no rule book. There's no right or wrong. Whatever you and your family agree on, just do it. Like, yeah, like your dad needed to feel like himself again one last time. And that's huge.
Totally. I love that you guys improv. That like really brought a smile to my face. Because like, it's scary dealing with someone who like doesn't remember. We had a family friend who actually, she just passed away a few days ago, but she had dementia. She was 96 and she knew her memory was going. And so I remember she would be like, now, my memory is getting a little bit bad. And so I might just need to like ask you your name again during the conversation. And she just was like very matter of fact about it and like didn't make it weird. But I think like really people, there's no rule book, which is why it's so important to be talking about this, because you can then be like, oh, I like that. Or like, I didn't like that. I wonder why I didn't like, what would I like instead? And like, but just like, there's no blueprint. So when you're going through this like big scary experience, you're just like, oh my God, what do I do? Am I doing it right? Like, I feel like there's this big notion of like wanting to grieve correctly or like be the like caretaking daughter, which like I did. And I definitely didn't do the best job. I did like the best I knew. Like,
absolutely.
Like, you know, I think it's so important to like keep talking about stuff like this.
Totally. And yeah. And that's the thing too. Like you're going to mess up. First of all, and you still need to have your own life. Like, especially since I'm in a marathon and not a sprint, like there's been times where I've had to tell my mom, like, I just need to go away for like a couple days and don't text me. I'm so sick of you. She's like, fine, go. You've got to like they say on airplanes, like you need to put on your oxygen mask before you assist anybody else, because you can run out of steam very quickly. So don't feel guilty for the things that like you need to do for you. And then also you like, I've messed up so many times in taking care of her, like, and she's messed up being my mom. And as long as we just like all forgive each other.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah. 100%. Totally. And you don't realize maybe that you quote unquote messed up until hindsight, like the perspective I have of what I would have done differently, there is no way I would have had that. So just, I'm really into this notion of being compassionate with yourself and like that it's okay. Like you would never to someone else be like, you fucking idiot. Like, I can't believe you did this. Like we talk to ourselves. So how do we like be just a little bit more gentle with these like big emotional topics, especially?
And that's a huge thing. I love what you just said, because it's something that I realized like just a year ago that I really had down the whole like performative self-love thing. Like I could, you know, dance to a Lizzo song with the best of them, but like self-compassion is so much more important, and it's a whole different beast. Is
and
being
it's
like
hard.
Yeah, it's hard, because like I would do something and be like, ah, oh, God, you're such an idiot, like that was so stupid of you. And it's like, no, take that back. And now I say like, ah, oh, that was so human of you. And then it's like, aren't I just such a funny fallible human?
Yeah. and it's like you have to teach yourself how to do that. I don't want anyone listening to think you just flip a switch one day and you're compassion. It's like
learning a new trade. It's like exercising a new muscle.
Exactly. And it's like, sometimes I'll be like, you fucking idiot. And then I'm like, no, like it's okay. Like,
it's okay.
Human and normal.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And how boring would we be if we were perfect? This world, well, I mean, we can't get much more imperfect than it currently is. But how, but how boring would we be?
Yes.
I know. We're now switching over. This is the political podcast.
Yes. on that note, though, why don't we stop? I feel like we could keep going for a long time. I'm so grateful that you could be on the podcast and you answered my DM. really, that's how I run the podcast. I'm like, I'm just going to DM them and see what happens. And I'm so happy that you answered me.
Oh, hell yeah. Like I said, I love that how my DMs have changed from thirsty dudes to people being like, hey, you want to talk about death with me? And I'm like, hell yeah, I do.
it's a different wavelength in your life. It's fine.
Exactly. Thank you for having me on. I really think that this podcast is amazing and I love the whole concept behind it. And I'm so honored to be a guest and I love everything you're doing.
Oh, I'm so happy. If you want to tell people where to find you online.
First of all, if you resonated with anything that I said, or you would like to hear my podcast, it's called Stage 4 Clinger. You can find it anywhere you listen to your podcasts, except for Luminary, because I'm not a sellout yet.
But maybe one day.
Hey, if the price is right, baby.
same for anyone listening. Just so you know.
Glad to sell out. You can follow me personally on Instagram, Kate Nichols with 2 L's and 2 Z's.
Amazing. And then your podcast has an Instagram also, right?
Stage yes. 4 Clinger. Stage 4 Clinger.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. All right. Thank you so much again. Thank you everyone for listening. If you found the podcast helpful at all, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. The more reviews there are, the easier it is for other people looking for this type of content to find us. You can follow us on social at @the_griefcoach. And our website is www.thegriefcoach.co. Thanks everyone for listening.